makes you, you? For that matter, what makes me, me? This question has transfixed humanity for ages. What is the crucial thing that makes you unique from every single other person who has ever lived? I personally believe that is my stunning personality that separates me from everyone else in the world. Alas, one can dream. However, there is a little something more personal to us. The very thing that we are made of, our DNA, which we all share, but yet is unique. There is one person whose DNA has perhaps accomplished the most, crucial in both creating and contaminating billions of dollars worth of science experiments, shot into space, and even injected into other people. It is what much of modern cellular and medical research relies upon, and it was crucial for developing a vaccine for polio, is a keystone in cancer research, and was even a key part in developing the COVID-19 vaccine. If only they'd asked first.
A document that changed the world. HeLa, tissue culture grown from cancer cells taken from Henrietta Lacks at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, 1951. I'm Joe Janes of the University of Washington Information School, and once again, I'm delighted to be joined by my student Lexi Kolakowski, who researched, produced, and co-wrote this episode.
The year is 1950, and cell research is a rapidly growing field. However, there is one very big problem. Every single time researchers ran experiments using cells, the cells died. Labs were running their tests on any cell they could get their hand on, which caused a huge problem in the field of cellular biology. Because there is no standardization across experiments, researchers could not replicate each other's experiments. That's a big issue when it comes to the process of scientific peer review. In effect, it was hard to tell if any given result was meaningful to science or just a fluke of the experiment. Lots of researchers were attempting to solve this problem by attempting to propagate cells in their labs. George Gay, a cell biologist at Johns Hopkins, was trying to get as many human cells as he could to test out different processes of growing cells. The first problem he had to overcome was how to successfully feed cells so that they could grow. He tested a variety of different ingredients to grow cells, umbilical cord blood, cow fetuses, and even chicken's blood. While he was testing recipes, he also needed a steady influx of human cells, which came from the very patients that were visiting Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins had an open, free public ward, so researchers there viewed using patient samples as their right in lieu of payment. One of those patients was Henrietta Lacks, a Black woman who was born in Roanoke, Virginia. Henrietta attended school through the sixth grade, while also supporting her family through helping with their tobacco farm. At 14, Henrietta had her first child, Lawrence, and 4 years later, she had her second child, Elsie. In 1941, when Henrietta was 21, she married her cousin, Day Lacks. Not long after, they moved to Turner Station, Maryland, where Day had gotten a job working at Bethlehem Steel. By the age of 30, Henrietta had three more children, David, Deborah, and Zachariah. In 1951, only 4 months after Zachariah was born, Henrietta knew that something was wrong, especially when she noticed blood spotting on her underwear when it was not her time of the month. She was able to reach inside of herself and feel a hard lump on her cervix. Just months after giving birth at Johns Hopkins, Henrietta returned there, where the gynecologist discovered a shiny, purple mass on her cervix, which he cut off and sent for testing. The results? Henrietta had a malignant form of cervical cancer, and the only form of treatment for it, at the time, was by inserting a thin tube of radium into the cervix. However, as the tube was being inserted, the doctor also took two samples, one from Henrietta's cervix and one from the tumor growing there. Henrietta was not asked if she was willing to give samples, and she wasn't even informed they had been taken. She was just sent on her way with regular checkups to see how her treatment was progressing. And at first it seemed like the cure was working. Her tumor had disappeared and her bleeding had stopped. As the treatment continued, Henrietta asked when she could have another child, and was crushed when she discovered that the doctors had neglected to tell her that her treatment would make her infertile. Just weeks later, Henrietta's pain got worse, and after inspection, the doctors noted that she had gonorrhea, which had superimposed on the site where the radium had sat. And even as her treatment progressed, Henrietta could feel the cancer moving through her, though her doctors noted that there were no outside signs of more tumors. It was only a few weeks later that a hard tumor would be discovered on her pelvic wall. And soon after that, her whole abdomen was filled with tumors. A month after doctors had written that Henrietta was fine, she had tumors all inside of her. Just 8 months after her original diagnosis was with cancer, all that Johns Hopkins could do was try to ease her suffering. Tumors were appearing daily, and she spent her days in a pained and fevered state. On October 4th, in 1951, Henrietta died. Just 10 months after the diagnosis, the cervical cancer had killed her. However, a small part of Henrietta was still living. That little sample of her cervical cancer, taken months before, had been processed into George Gay's lab. The vial with her cells was labeled HELA, from the first two letters of her first and last names. And so, even as Henrietta lay dying, part of her was growing in the form of the HeLa cell line. Gay's lab had been able to successfully grow HeLa at such rapid rates that he was sending samples to any researcher who was interested. HeLa was the long-awaited immortal cell line, the perfect combination of Henrietta cells and HPV, and as a bonus, it grew quickly and was hardy enough to be transported and grown around the world. After Henrietta died, Gay requested an autopsy to be performed on her. Unlike taking samples from living patients, which was perfectly acceptable to do without their knowledge, it was illegal to remove tissues from the dead without permission. Henrietta's corpse was given more agency and protection than she ever was. After convincing Henrietta's husband that an autopsy could help protect their children from dying like Henrietta, he agreed to it. And so, once again, Henrietta became a resource for more cells and tissues. Only after all this was she finally laid to rest in the family cemetery. HeLa, however, showed no signs of rest. At the end of 1951, the world was in the midst of the polio epidemic, and in order to test the vaccine, human cells had to be used. After infecting a bit of HeLa with polio, Gay found that HeLa was more susceptible to polio than most other cells, making it the perfect candidate for testing the polio vaccine. So, Tuskegee University, yes, the very same place as the infamous Tuskegee syphilis study, which had been ongoing for nearly 20 years at this point, set up a factory to mass-produce HeLa cells. HeLa was now a mass-produced product. In just a year, Henrietta's tumor had grown, killed her, and was now being used across the globe in the battle against polio and many other diseases. Scientists were testing HeLa in any way they could. After all, if some cells died, more could easily be grown. There was even a case where HeLa was injected into the arms of people. It immediately started growing tumors on their arms, and the HeLa had to be cut off. Fears of human-animal hybrids were real, as HeLa was grafted onto different animal specimens. Luckily, none of those grafts grew into a successful hybrid. By the 1960s, HeLa was everywhere. However, it was no longer unique. There were multiple immortal cell lines being used in research, which was a good thing, as it provided the opportunity for research to be done on different types of cells. With a plethora of cell lines available, researchers thought that human cell lines could spontaneously transform into immortal cell lines when placed in the right conditions. Then, researcher Stanley Gardner noticed that all of the 18 most commonly used cell cultures all contained the same genetic marker, glucose-6-phosphate dehydrogenase A, which was almost exclusively found in Black Americans. He dropped the so-called HeLa bomb, that HeLa was so good at growing it could infect and take over other cell lines. Every single case of spontaneous transformation was actually a case of HeLa infecting and taking over the cell line. This affected millions of dollars worth of research, as any research done on non-HeLa tissues would have likely been infected by HeLa, thus invalidating work that compared tissue types. After all, how could unique cells have different responses to drugs if they were all HeLa? In a way, Henrietta was able to get some revenge on the researchers who used HeLa. The same cancer that took her life also enabled her cells to be extraordinarily useful for research and wreak havoc on unsuspecting scientists if there's any breach in the containment of them. Even with the risks, HeLa remained an extremely useful tool for scientific research. After all, it's quick and cheap to make, and it didn't matter if it died. Except, HeLa is still, in a sense, part of Henrietta. Arguably, it is Henrietta. And it is the part of Henrietta that killed her. But It is still her. Henrietta was so many things. A woman who would feed anyone who came to her house, and a mother of five who always painted her nails red. But Henrietta was also, now, a tool. The very thing that made her, her DNA, was now being used across the world. Henrietta, who did not have an education above sixth grade, was at the forefront of cellular and medical research. And she had no knowledge that her cells were even being used. So, this is a podcast about documents. How does a cell line even relate to this? Hela is a document of the DNA of the woman Henrietta Lacks, a document of the cancer that killed her, and a document of the lack of autonomy a Black woman had in her own treatment in the 1950s medical system, and a document of the research that is built on top of it. Today, vials of Hela can be bought for around $150 each, and they even go on sale occasionally. But Henrietta's family sees none of these direct profits. While Hela is the driving force of medical research, Henrietta's family have often gone into medical debt after needing procedures done. As of this recording, Henrietta's family has recently settled multiple lawsuits with Thermo Fisher and most recently Novartis. They are starting to see their share of the profits made off of Henrietta. At the same time, they have had their entire genetic code freely shared across the world. If DNA is unique to us and a part of what makes us us, we cannot separate the Hela cell line from the woman who it was. Henrietta had a huge impact on humanity through the advancement in medical research she still helps drive. Hela, Henrietta, they are invaluable to improving the lives of people around the world. Tiny pieces of Henrietta are used every day across the world. These cells are a living shadow of the woman who created them. Hela is many things. It's the very building block of life that made up Henrietta. It's a ghost that still haunts the medical system, and it does not even come close to being the mother who always had her nails painted red.